Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Ikke det? Nei. Nei, men da holder vi det enkelt og gir oss her, fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken. Superenkelt regnskap.
This episode is sponsored by Fondoren Fine Timepieces. Fondoren is also the official timekeeper for the Guinness World Record match Odin and I will play during Norwich S in June 2024. We both have the watches, Odin. Great watches.
Yes, for sure. So this is a Norwegian watch brand that's made in Switzerland. It's top quality. They have all price ranges and we wear them daily. So I love to wear my Il Tempo Gigante.
I do as well. So go check out fondoren.no.
Sjakksnakk med Askel Bryn og Odin Blikra-Vea. Dagens gjest Magnus Carlsen og David Howell.
I thought at least he might have learned from 2 years ago, but it felt like, I mean, we talk about
He was exactly the same.
He was exactly the same, exactly.
Hi, and welcome to a new episode of Sjakksnakk. My name is Askel Bryn, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and sidekick, Odin Blikra-Vea. Welcome, Odin.
Thank you so much.
And this is a special episode. The candidates has just concluded, and we have a special treat for you today with one of the top commentators in the world and a good friend of the podcast, David Howell. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And a former world champion in classical chess, the reigning champion in Blitz and Rapid, and the top-rated player in the world. Welcome, Magnus Carlsen.
Thank you. I should also add that I'm a former winner of the candidates.
True. That's true.
That's my qualification to be here.
Exactly.
And I have a special announcement as well. I would officially like to welcome you to the biggest chess podcast of Europe. Welcome.
Okay. That's great. And let's jump right into things. As you said, Magnus, you won the candidates tournament back in 2013. And Gukesh, obviously, now has won this year's candidates and is qualified for a world championship match versus Ding. And try and describe to our listeners back home, what feeling do you think he has now that he has managed to do this?
I must feel amazing, of course. And it's usually a staple of some of the greatest players ever that they sort of succeed at the highest level a little bit. They obviously show promise at an early age, but then they succeed at the highest level a little bit before people generally expect them to. So it's been an amazing story, and I'm sure he's feeling all kinds of excited now.
And I did read somewhere that during the freestyle chess tournament in Germany, he had a quick word with you asking about some general advice before going into the candidates.
Yeah, we had a quick talk about the candidates. I mean, I found it hard to give great advice because you don't know what's going to work for everybody. But I mean, first of all, he's a wonderful guy. Very, very quiet, very, very humble, and has a great curiosity when it comes to everything about chess. So I don't even remember like how the conversation like came along, but the only thing I remember saying is like, don't go crazy because others generally will. And I'm not sure if that was helpful. I would like to take exactly 0.00 credit for his success, and I didn't expect him to do this well either, but I'm really, really happy for him.
And you, David, you did some amazing commentary throughout the candidates tournament. And how was it for you?
Well, Askel, as someone who nearly qualified for the candidates twice, I'm going to pretend. No, it was fun to watch. Obviously, I think like Magnus, I didn't expect it. I didn't expect Gukesh to win. I didn't think he was ready. I thought he was still very raw. I still thought there would be too many weaknesses in his game over such a long stretch. But I mean, credit to him. He played like a very mature player. He rode the emotions, rode the ups and downs. I thought he would crack just before the halfway point when he lost to Faruja from a dominant position. And yeah, I mean, it was just dramatic. I mean, Gukesh aside, It was a lot of fun to commentate on. The games were up and down. I mean, it's perfect from a commentating point of view that the games were not necessarily the highest level every time. It was just the players pushing and pushing and going for each other. And yeah, it was a tight race. It was a lot of fun to watch as a spectator, fan of chess.
Great. And I mean, for people watching chess tournaments, listening to this chess podcast, etc., they probably have heard the name Gyökeres, but still he hasn't been an established top player for a long time. So could you give us an introduction? Who is this guy and how did he become such a great player?
Yeah, Gyökeres. He's still only 17. He became a grandmaster at 12 years old. So a bona fide prodigy. Yeah, he's fantastic at calculation. He's clearly super serious about the game. You nearly never see him smile because he's always just in the zone. Yeah, very good tactically. I think one thing that struck me a few years ago was how he said he never used engines at all. Literally didn't even switch on, didn't know how to use engines Wow. until he was 14, 15. So he was already a very strong grandmaster at the time. And yeah, clearly his approach, he does everything right. But yeah, it's hard to sum up because, like you say, he's still a bit of an unknown quantity and we haven't seen him win too many of these big events or even been kind of a fixture at these big events. It's just the last 6 months he's really come to life. And yeah, it's exciting to know where he goes next. I don't know how he's going to evolve as a chess player. And if he becomes world champion, that'll be incredible.
Yeah,
it struck me when he played, I don't remember exactly which event, but he played on the Champions Chess Tour in 2021. In their preliminaries. And I think I played the opening like a little bit too casually against him. I was a lot worse as white in some London system. I eventually managed to turn the game around and I pushed him a little bit before it was a draw, but not necessarily in that game. And in other games, what was noticeable about Gyökeres, even compared to other youngsters, was that he was playing extremely ambitious mm-hmm. chess and that he was playing the same way against everybody, like really powerful, ambitious chess. And like when you don't have quite enough chess strength to sort of pull that off, it can often be detrimental to your score. And you've seen in certain tournaments that he just falls apart because he cannot like quite put it together. Like he's trying to do a little bit too much, but eventually when that style starts to click, then you can see what kind of results it would give. But it was really noticeable that back then that he had a style which you could see that he could become something really special. And yeah, I'm surprised that it took him this short a time to become a world championship challenger. Obviously, that's a surprise to most people, but he always had that potential of being up there. Mm.
And Odin, you told me earlier today you watched every single minute of the Candidates Tournament and you represent the fans out there, the viewers. You're sitting next to Magnus and David who commentated on the tournament. What do you want to discuss with them? What's your talking points?
No, because I was surprised as well by Gyökeres, but I had him as like a favorite amongst the Indian players and it's solely based on like very small sample size that I saw him play the Norway Open where he got 8.5 out of 10. But the thing was he had so many equalish end games and middle games that he managed to win against strong grandmasters. And that I thought to myself, so where have I seen that before?
Yeah.
And it's the guy sitting next to me. So he was barely rated over 2600 at that time. And he beat like equally strength players. So I knew that something like he was sort of a comet just going up and up.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts, Magnus, on that comparison from Odin?
I think to be fair, not necessarily at the start of my career, but early in my career, I was very much based on calculation. That's typical for kids. Like you haven't developed that understanding of the game yet. So you have to rely on your calculation. And from talking to Gyökeres and hearing the way he talks about chess in general and the games that he played, I think he is extremely calculation based. And that's also one of the reasons why he struggles more in faster chess, because then you cannot quite calculate fast enough for that style to work often. Like it has to be you need a lot more experience for that. But it struck me how good he is at calculation. And I think that's like mainly what he does, really, that he calculates extremely well. Both he calculates very quickly, he calculates precisely, and he's undogmatic in the way he calculates. So he will find ideas that other may not. He will have, I don't know if you can call it the intuition, but he will go further in lines that others will not, at least compared to myself, who's a bit of a lazy calculator.
and David, just before the candidates tournament, you and Magnus did a prediction video for chess.com. And if I remember correctly, I mean, Caruana and Nakamura were the big favorites. How big of a shock is it that Gukesh won in the end?
Yeah. Firstly, I'll say that we were nearly right. They were up there.
Yeah.
True. It could have been different.
Exactly. In the second half, Caruana went on a surge. She was kind of woken up by that loss against Nakamura. Naka as well bounced back from these losses against Vidit to kind of be there and thereabouts. But I thought, kind of, especially a 14-round event where stamina, experience, kind of knowing when to change gears, when to take risk, I thought that would favor the older guys. And three of the top four ultimately were more experienced players. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see an exception. I mean, Gukesh, I mean, like Magnus, I thought his game was maybe, it'll be neutralized by the older players who could kind of shut him down, could calculate just as well, but also had different kind of angles to their game. But somehow maybe it's just that ambition, kind of always pushing, and the fact that he was able to beat the tailenders in the competition, that was what kind of pushed him just above the experienced players.
That was maybe the key in the end to actually gain those points.
Yeah, I mean, what cost Nakamura, for example, was losing twice against Vidit, one of the kind of players towards the bottom. A couple of players failed to punish Faruja, Abasov, and ultimately there were a lot of draws actually against kind of the top players, the top finishing players against each other, and came down to who beat the tailenders, That's the case, I guess, in any round robin.
Uh-huh. And you would this was in the evening in Norway, and the games finished around 2:30 at night, and you were watching every day. What was the most enjoyable moment for you, what's your take?
I really love the Gukesh Firusha game where ultimately Firusha won. That was a big highlight, and like I love the obviously David's commentary, but especially Judith. She was amazing. Like still Judith Polgar. So many amazing chess abilities shown to the viewers, and obviously the last round was really dramatic. So following that through the bitter end for someone and to success for others.
Yeah. Okay, so Odin, tell us what was the big drama in the last round?
No, so basically four players could win before the last round and they played each other. So Gukesh was up by half a point, but so there were three of the players that needed to win. He had everything in his hands, and when it became clear that his game against Nakamura would end in a draw, Caruana had the winning position at several times during that game, but he couldn't get the ball in the net in the end.
So what happened in that game, Magnus, Caruana against Nepomniachtchi?
Yeah, there were several phases of that game. First, we had kind of a nervy opening phase where none of them were like getting to the point, even though like they got a reasonably complicated position with some imbalance that they both needed because they both needed to win, which is kind of the ideal situation for a chess game. Usually one person needs to win and the other one needs to draw in such a situation, but here they both needed to win. Then Nepo made a couple of fairly poor moves and he was in a lot of trouble. And then Caruana played more or less perfectly for a long while. Like he played as Caruana does at his best, like very pointed calculation, very, very powerful play. And it was at that point, it seemed obvious that Corona is going to win that game, especially because after like an initial sort of nervy phase, he had not shown any kind of nerves in that game. It seemed that he was in total control. Then, to his credit, like Nepo was fighting really well for a long time. The problem was that his position was lost, and Karana was not making any mistakes. And it was not the kind of position, like Karana had already done all of the hard work. So he became a little bit short on time. Again, Nepo was doing everything he could, but it didn't seem like enough. And then all of a sudden, like Fabiano started to make a few weird moves. I don't know if Corona has been asked about it. Like he had one extremely simple win with a move rook to d2, picking up the pawn on h2 while keeping the pin on the rook on d8. Normally that's child's play. That's extremely easy for a player of that caliber, and he would never miss it if it wasn't in that situation. So he was really unfortunate that the nerves would hit him in that exact moment. But still, after that, he was winning. He played bishop h7, allowing the sacrifice by Nepo, which made it more difficult. After that, it was a bit random. Like, I know that they were making some mistakes according to the engine, but it was hard. I felt like Fabio was playing a lot of good moves to keep the game going. Nepo was also finding a lot of good ideas. So I wouldn't like necessarily blame them for what was happening afterwards. Fabi had some wins, Nepo had some draws, but they were all kind of hard. But it was, as a spectator, it was amazing to watch.
Crazy game.
Yeah, because there were so many opportunities, but they were also so hard that you cannot like blame them. But like just the nerves of that game with the consequences that there were. It was great to see. And honestly, like it was classical chess at its best there. It's the end of the tournament. It's going to decide everything. And I don't think that the players did so poorly after that. Like it's easy to sit and judge them. But I actually think they did quite well. The problem, like they had both had like one almost inexplicably poor phase. First Nepo, when he got into trouble, when he had oceans of time on the clock, and Fabi a little bit before he was in serious time trouble. But I thought otherwise they fought extremely, extremely well. It's only a shame for them that they got the result that none of them wanted.
Denne episoden sponset av sjakkhuset.no. Her finner du alt du trenger av sjakkutstyr, sjakkbrett, brikker, klokker og bøker. Du finner alt innen sjakk på sjakkhuset.no eller på The Good Night I Oslo sentrum, og der liker jo vi å henge, Odin.
Ja, det en helt fantastisk plass for alle som litt sjakkinteressert. Der tilbyr jo sjakkhuset både undervisning, eventer og arrangementer med norske toppspillere for enkeltpersoner, grupper og bedrifter.
Det stemmer, så sjekk ut sjakkhuset.no. And David, after the game, Nepo actually said, I'm sorry, to Caruana. What did the commentators make of that? And have you ever seen anything like that?
I've apologized to opponents when they've just been dominating a whole game, they've been winning, and then it's just like a one-off blunder and that type of thing. I think sometimes we feel that results aren't deserved, but I guess from Nepo's standpoint, he'd been there before. He'd qualified for world championship matches. He knew how heartbroken Fabi must have been, because at some point, both of them knew what the result should be. But ultimately, I think both of them were just shell-shocked. We saw Fabiano react as well, saying it was his fault. You know, it's only got himself to blame. And I mean, yeah, I can only imagine how devastated both of them were, especially Fabiano. But I mean, I just want to say as well, the number of viewers watching that peak chess moment, it was like over 200,000 on chess.com alone. It was
wow, that's amazing.
Not to mention the FIDE sites, the Lee Chess viewers as well, and others across different kind of national platforms. So I mean, it was just like Magnus said, it just everything aligned. The final game going was the one where everything was riding on, and It was double jeopardy. Both players needed to win. So it was kind of, yeah, I couldn't have scripted it better. But unfortunately, in that scenario, someone has to lose. And
I just want to make this short comment on something you said earlier about Fabiano's tournament. Because even though it was heartbreaking for him to not win the final game, like he was never, I don't think he was ever in the lead except after round two, I think, when he beat Abasov. And then I guess he took it into round three as well. So it would have been a great comeback story more than anything else. But also what you said about that losing against Nakamura actually kind of sparked him. I think that's a bit of a simplistic evaluation, because what really happened was that he lost to Nakamura. Like Fabio also, like he'd barely done anything in the tournament before. Like he was a bit better against Gukesh, but nothing too major.
Solid, but nothing special.
Yeah. Like he hadn't done much at all. Like he wasn't getting things from the opening as he usually is. He wasn't doing much. And then he just happened to play somebody in round 10 or whatever it was, who was just not having a good tournament in Alireza.
Yeah.
And I know from experience that that can turn things around when you're feeling shitty, you're not confident at all about his play. I think he even admitted that he was not confident about his play whatsoever. That you get that one game against somebody who's struggling, and Alireza was struggling. I guess, I don't know about you, but that was the one obviously big miss that I had in my prediction, that I thought that he would do at least reasonably well. Mm-hmm. He always has weak moments because he is by nature an extremely optimistic player, and this will lead him to take unreasonable risks in a few games. But I also thought that he would have many more strong moments. And I think as the tournaments go along, he just ends up taking more and more risks. Mm-hmm. They're less and less realistic. And he just ends up looking honestly like foolish. Mm-hmm. And when you have like one of the best players in the world losing or being lost in almost every game, like that, it really adds a different flavor to the tournament. Like suddenly beating him became almost as important as being Abasov, because you knew he had a target on his back, especially in the black games, but even to some extent in the white games. And I think after that, Fabi, he believed again, his win against Prague as black was quite impressive. His game against Vidit, I thought, was one of the best games of the tournament. Like a really, really good squeeze. And you've seen that in other tournaments as well. Like Sinkfield Cup last year, he was struggling, not doing anything. As soon as he starts winning, he starts playing at a different level. For myself as well, playing in Weissenhaus earlier this year, I mean, I sucked. And then I won one good game against Alireza, and suddenly I was playing really good. So it's interesting to see psychologically. And I think if they'd played another cycle, I think he'd probably won the tournament quite comfortably.
Confidence is key. Confidence is key. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you said Faruja. Actually, that was the one where we made the predictions where I wasn't sure. I thought he'd finish somewhere in the middle. But then I thought at least he might have learned from 2 years ago. But it felt like, I mean, we talk about
He
was exactly the same, exactly. And like, we talk a lot about like age, like different generations. And that's where the likes of Gukesh, Pragnananda and Abdusatorov, like they're so different from Faruja, because they managed to block out the emotion. And emotion is just the literally carrying Faruja's game. So that's the one thing I would say.
And there were some controversy as well with the father, police involved. And at some point, the father said that Faruja said, I'm quitting chess. And obviously, Faruja later debunked that and was probably just said privately in the heat of the moment. But Magnus, you have really praised Faruja in the past, and you see him as a great talent, obviously. He's been above 2800. How do you predict his future now for the next few years?
Well, he beat me in Title Tuesday yesterday, so I think he's back now.
He's back.
And he's going to be one of the greatest players of all time. Now, I think I don't know how much he enjoys classical chess these days. It's hard for me to say. But yeah, I mean, I think it's clear that this was a... This, for his fans, this is pretty discouraging. It showed that he hadn't really taken any steps forward from the last candidates tournament. And he's too uneven, too emotional. I still think he's got more talent than any of the other guys, but he hasn't figured it out.
And it was, as we all remember, I mean, he barely managed to qualify for the candidates. He was playing this tournament in France in late December, I think. And for his fans, I mean, this was maybe the moment where he finally would be able to qualify or to prove himself. Yeah.
On that point, I just want to mention Gökeş as well. Like, his path wasn't simple. Like, a tournament was last minute organized in London, became a qualifier for the candidates. He didn't make it there. Suddenly a tournament popped up in India. And it's like, it gives the likes of Gökeş, Eregaisi those opportunities, but other people don't get invited to these closed round robins. So actually I thought, I mean, obviously everyone's sticking to the rules, playing the system, but I mean, something needs to change because it felt so convoluted. And I mean, everyone relied on a bit of luck, a bit of good fortune to make it to this tournament, and especially Gökeş and Faruja. I was a bit, I had mixed feelings actually when they made it initially. Yeah.
But to be fair, Gökeş did beat a very strong field.
That's true. He did it. I mean, he stuck to the rules.
Like, and to a somewhat lesser degree, actually, Alreza did make 7 out of 7.
No, exactly.
In his tournament, but still, obviously, makes for great entertainment that you have this frantic race at the end. But it obviously doesn't feel completely completely fair. No.
And India is obviously now loving chess. It's a big chess boom. We have all these young, super talented players. And how do you think India as a chess nation will continue to flourish after Gökeş's win in the candidates?
I guess the only way is up. I mean, chess already feels, I mean, just judging from the outside, it feels like it's boomed massively over there. It's like a national sport now. You've got the Prime Minister tweeting so regularly about chess. But I mean, it's only good for the game, right? Billions of people watching, tuning in.
And Vishy Anand is still hanging around. He's been a great mentor for these guys. Who do you think will help him towards the World Championship match?
Help Gökeş? I don't know. If I were him, I'd stick to whatever he's doing. Like, I know Gajewski is one of his main coaches. I don't know. Kind of wider than that, but Magnus, maybe you have more insight.
Yeah, I don't know too much except Gajewski, and I think Gajewski is really, really good. He's one of the best at really good practical ideas. Yeah. So I think at the very start, Gökeş, when he started playing super tournaments, like, he was clearly suffering because of his openings. As soon as his openings became better, his results have started to improve as well. So I think whatever he's doing is definitely working, and I cannot imagine that his team will be too different for the World Championship.
The biggest mistake would be changing things, adding things, like overwhelming himself, putting extra pressure on himself. He should just keep things as they are, pretty much. It's working.
Talking about ideas and opening preps and so on, Askel asked me about highlights. I forgot about the game between Prague and Gökeş. It enjoyed me a lot with the openings that Prague displayed throughout the candidates. What are your guys' thoughts on the opening play from Prague?
Yeah, I mean, that game, Prague against Gökeş, I'm guessing you mean the one where Prague sacrificed 3 pawns or just went straight for the throat. I mean, impressive prep, really cool idea, but then I'm not sure it's against the right player. Like Magnus was saying, Gökeş is really good at calculation. Mm. If you calculate your way out of that as black,
that's kind of what he did there, yeah.
And that's what he did, yeah. He basically won a piece, calculated his way out, and won the game. It's like, sometimes, I don't know, it's very high risk very early on, which is fair enough. But then if you don't get the reward, you might regret it. And that's what kind of spurred Gökeş on. And Prague.
Yeah, but Prague made a good comeback after that. He was plus one at some point.
I'm just not sure it's his style to go all out for the throat, and I don't know. It just felt
a bit.
Yeah, but also, I don't know, you have to play something, right? So if they have an idea that they think is worth playing, then they might go for it. But this one is unusual in the sense that it's like, even on high depth, it's actually hard to find equality for white in that line. And usually when you play these bluffy lines as white, where you sacrifice something, you do have some safety net. Like, sometimes it's not that risky, but often, like, if black finds the best ways, like, you have to play really well as white in order to maintain equality. But in this particular instance, I may be wrong, but it doesn't seem like white has equal play if black plays correctly. Like, maybe he'd analyzed as far as that you have something that you can make a draw in. But that was an extraordinarily risky choice, I would say. And one of the problems with such a choice for certain players is that sometimes, like, Gyökeres didn't play the very most critical way, but he played in a fairly human way. But it didn't feel after that as if the position was... I mean, the position was objectively quite equal after Gyökeres played f5 instead of taking the pawn in e6, rejecting the third pawn sack. Mm. It didn't feel like white had the easier play. Like, you had to find some really computerish ideas to continue the attack. And that may be the part that they hadn't thought through quite enough, that they hadn't analyzed quite well enough there. Because after that, they both played quite human chess. And Gyökeres obviously played better, and he won the game. But it was not an illogical result based on the position that they got. It simply was very, very difficult to play for white. And he probably needed to know a bit more there.
I think, Odin, I'm just jealous because I can never even imagine playing such vibrant, energetic chess. I'm just jealous of that kind of attitude towards it. But ultimately, it was high risk.
As I was learning to play the Catalan before the 2021 World Championship, I had this gambit that I played in the second game against Nepo, where he went for this b5 line in the classical Catalan, and I just sacked the pawn. This was hard. It was really hard for me psychologically. I'm not... I'd spent so much time preparing, just mentally. Like, you're going to be down a pawn... You're not getting the pawn back. And you're going to have to attack, but you cannot necessarily attack immediately. And the ideas are going to be somewhat different. Like, I know from experience as a player who doesn't... For somebody like Mamed Yarov, it's easier. He's used to sacrificing. I'm not. Even as I was sitting there, it wasn't easy. And it showed in my play that I... messed up later and I got a losing position at some point.
So basically you're saying you just wanted your pawn back, like to feel normal again.
No. Part of me wanted that, but also I'd spent much time like mentally just preparing for that. And now I'm more comfortable. Like, I played later against Mamed Yarov, and if I can say I won a good game sacrificing a pawn there. I don't know how many such positions Prague has played. I cannot remember him, but yeah, I can. For Mamed Yarov, for Dubov, this is easy, but for like mortal super GMs, it's hard. And I can, I'm projecting a bit, but I can imagine Prague being there. So I got my prep, I'm really happy. Now Gyökeres did something that I didn't prepare for or I forgot, so he cannot be that good. Now I should have a good position, but I don't see it. I'm down material. What am I going to do?
Spiraling.
Try and calculate my way out of it. The lines are too difficult, you know.
He's still learning, Prague. I think his storyline, his tournament, was what we expected maybe from Gyökeres as well. Kind of, you have some hits where you play great, like you feel like you're in the mood, and then you get some bad results because you're a bit over-optimistic, and he'll learn, he'll be back.
Prague did well.
Yeah, I mean, he did well.
Yeah, completely respectable. He showed good ideas. He won some good games. He also had some bad losses, but that's to be expected. Like, he had an excellent candidate's debut. It was just that he was overshadowed by another kid who did something that's never been done before in history.
So yeah, we're talking about Prague, but is he the kind of same caliber as Mamed Yaro and Dubov, as you mentioned, same type of player?
I wouldn't necessarily say so. Prague is a bit different than Gyökeres. You've seen Prague do really well in rapid and blitz events online. So Prague is also quite calculation based, but he's a bit more intuitive still. He's got excellent technique. He's got a great attitude, and he has a good understanding. Like, he's going to be a player who's going to be very hard to deal with in the future for sure. And I think he's going to be very hard to beat as well.
Interesting.
At some point.
Very interesting. And we do have to talk a little bit about Nakamura as well. He had a great tournament. He almost won. He almost qualified last time around as well. But he also lost both games against Virit, which is a big surprise. With a normal score of, let's say, at least 1 point out of two, he would have won the candidates tournament. Do you think this was his last chance to qualify for a world championship match?
No, not necessarily. I think even in 2 years, he'll probably be a good player, like a very, very good player if he wants to. I have to say that I was not that impressed with his candidates event.
Why is that?
And yeah, I thought both the games he lost, obviously, to Vidit were from poor to like almost shockingly poor. And other games, like his game against the Basov, was extremely shaky. The game against Alreza as well. He did win one really good game against Fabiano, though. So that was like his best moment. And then also in the last game, like he didn't even come close to putting any pressure. So I thought he did well practically. He saved some very bad positions, and he sort of got the most out of his tournament in that sense. So obviously losing those games to Vidit is something he may regret, but it did feel like from the play that, for instance, Caruana, even though his score wasn't that great for most of the time, like playing wise, he was a bit better and he was a bit closer.
And David Nepo obviously was also really close to qualifying for his third consecutive match. What do you think he feels now?
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be human if he wasn't a bit disappointed, frustrated. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride, it feels like, for him. He keeps coming second in big events, keeps kind of coming so close. But I mean, just throughout the last few rounds, I mean, we saw that big reaction against Fabiano after the last round. But I mean, even before that, for several rounds, after every single game, he was just lying at the board, head in hands. He looked wrecked, looked exhausted. And I think it was taking its toll. It's been a roller coaster a few years for him. And maybe it'll actually be kind of, yeah, maybe the benefit will be that it takes the pressure off throughout the next year now, and that he'll actually be able to focus a bit more on other tournaments and relax a bit. It definitely feels like he's been saving his best for these events, and that builds up a lot of psychological kind of pressure. So yeah, I mean, he had a great event. I mean, he saved so many bad positions. It was incredible. But yeah, I think it's maybe for the chess world as well. It's nice to see a new name, a challenge for the crown.
I also think he missed his big chance in the penultimate round. He had a significant advantage out of the opening against Nakamura. And that was his big chance. Obviously, Gyökeres was nowhere near better against Alreza from the opening, so he maybe didn't feel the urgency at that point, but that was his big shot. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, as you said, like most of the time he was just hanging on, using his practical strength of his fighting ability and also constantly being ahead on the clock, which is a skill as well. That was mainly keeping him afloat in the tournament. But yeah, I think that's probably what should be his biggest regret, is that penultimate round where he didn't seize the moment. He didn't feel the urgency to push in that one.
And then we have Caruana, who was also really close. He hasn't qualified now since he played U Magnus back in 2018. So all these three guys are a bit older than the next generation. Do you think they still have a chance in 2 years' time, these players we're talking about?
Yeah, I think they have a chance. And I think Caruana's done well. He's played 5 candidates tournaments. He's won one, which I think is about what he's expected to do. Mm. And he's also come close in every other tournament, as far as I can remember. Or no, he didn't come close in 2020, to be fair. But he was at least like lurking at either 50% or plus one, threatening to make that jump. So I think he's done about what you'd expect. And same with Nakamura, and even a bit more with him since he's younger. There is no reason for him to not be one of the best players in the world in 2025 or 6 or whatever they have the next candidates, unless he loses motivation. Mm.
And my final question goes out to all of you. I can start with you, David. So now, in 6 months' time, there will be a new World Championship match between the reigning champion Ding Liren, mm-hmm. and Gukesh. We haven't really seen much of Ding lately. The tournaments that he has played, he's done quite poor, to be honest, at least results wise. So, what is your take on the match, and who do you think will win?
At this moment, it's hard. I mean, I think most of the world sees Gukesh as a favorite, just purely based on recent form. Personally, as a commentator, I want to see Ding kind of be back close to his best, at least, or at least in better shape, and make it a real fight. And then the old man in me also says, come on, Ding, you know, just do it for this, do it for the older gen, keep the youngsters at bay just one last time. So I don't know, mixed feelings, but ultimately I think it's going to be a fun match. Yeah, I can't see it being dull with too many boring draws. It feels like, especially Gukesh, he's going to press every game. And that could be good. Could be good for Ding even, potentially, if Gukesh goes too hard. First time, of course, for him as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting. As you mentioned, I mean, Ding is the older player. He's representing your and Magnus's generation, and Caruana, Nakamura, Nepo, etc. So that's an interesting aspect as well. What are your thoughts, Odin?
Yeah, not that many thoughts, but to be honest, but I have the feeling that Ding is gonna dig deep and somehow show up for this match, and it's like it's a world championship match that lives its own life, and I have a feeling we'll see an entirely different Ding, and I also have a feeling that might be enough, so I'm going with a Ding win, but I'm kind of rooting for Gukesh.
But also, I guess we have to keep in mind that Ding has actually played a match now, and he has won a world championship match, and that has experience, to count for something, right? And probably is not as nervous as I imagine Gukesh will be playing his first match. And finally, Magnus, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very open question who is going to have the best nerves in that match. Gukesh hasn't shown that many nerves so far, and he's also so young that he doesn't know any better. He doesn't understand that he should be nervous, which is, I think, could be a positive thing for him playing a match this early. And as you guys have mentioned, like, Ding has not looked good in these tournaments that he's played since he became world champion. And the question is whether he is sort of permanently broken from the last world championship that he played. And I'm not sure, but I think there is a possibility that he could be. I really hope that he will come back, not only in the world championship, but also in other tournaments, like he's playing Norway Chess before that. I hope that we will see him at a much higher level, but I'm not quite sure about that. I think he's able to show that kind of level as he's had in the past. He is probably going to be the favorite, but as it is, I'm not sure. And I think what happens in world championship matches is that you have all these months of preparation so that people play sometimes a bit different opening lines to try and be very solid at the start. But as the match progresses, people usually show their true colors, in the sense that their weaknesses are amplified, and they end up being pretty much the same player as they've shown recently. So I think if Ding continues to play really poorly leading up to the World Championship match, I don't think we should necessarily expect him to be at a much higher level when the moment comes. I have experience from that as well. Playing the first match against Anand, I was really scared looking at the Anand that he sort of used to be. And he was really impressive for the first few games. Then after the fourth game, when I saw a bit of a chink in his armor, that he did something extremely well in that game, but he also seemed quite vulnerable. All of a sudden, I realized that I'm not playing against Superman. I'm playing against an amazingly strong player, but who is somewhat past his peak. And that calmed me down. And for the other matches as well, I've realized that I'm playing against extremely flawed, but very strong, but extremely flawed human beings. And that, I think, at the moment is probably what we should expect from Ding. But I'm hoping that we're going to see something before that which suggests that he could be at least 90% of what he was when he was at his best in around 2019. Because I think the level that he showed in the match in 2023 was still quite far from his best. It just happened to be enough because he was playing somebody who, for all his chess ability, was also a bit of a nervous wreck.
So Magnus, you said there is a chance Ding is permanently broken. Can you elaborate on that, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there is a chance that he's not going to come back to the same level that he was at his peak around 2018, 2019. I think taking time off has done him some good during the World after the World Championship match. It clearly hasn't been enough quite yet. I hope he will come back, but it's not a foregone conclusion at all that we will ever see him playing at that level again. And I think what has happened to him after the World Championship match should make people, general chess fans, as well as other professionals, realize how tough these events actually are. Because we're now a year removed from his World Championship, and there aren't a lot of signs that he's recovered from that.
Interesting. And we do have some questions from our fans. I'll start with you, David, from Chesney Gina. Having watched Gukesh playing these 14 rounds of the candidates, what impresses you most about his style of chess, and what takeaways can we learn from his games?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, obviously just the killer instinct, actually. He won more games than I thought he would, even though he had several promising positions. Usually at this level, we saw it from others. They were missing opportunities. They were allowing kind of nerves to settle in, and then they'd kind of they'd bail in a way, like they'd take the safe way out. But he would keep pushing and pushing, and that served him very well in the end. Impressed me that he was able to kind of play all sorts of positions. There were some crazy fights, like we were talking about with Pragnananda. There were some quieter games as well. The way he beat Abbasov in quite a positional manner was quite impressive. Yeah, the big takeaway is that he's here to stay. He's not just a prodigy who made it to the candidates once. I mean, he's shown that he's maybe one of the standouts from the generation. And yeah, it's exciting. Exciting to see.
Very good. And Odin, you'll get the next question since you watched every minute of the candidates. Armando Marin is asking, what was the hardest game to watch?
Ooh, many contenders, but I'm going with the obvious one, the last game from between Caruana and Nepo. Was a roller coaster, and and it was quite late as well.
Yeah, correct. And Magnus from Goyo, do you think Gukesh won because he was in very good form and guys like Nepo, Fabi, and Nakamura weren't at their best?
I think it's fair to say that Gukesh more or less had a max tournament. Obviously, he could have done more in the game against El Reza, but you cannot expect him to win at every good position that he has. I don't think that he has the highest max level of any of those players. I don't think that he is the best or the second best player in the world. So if the question is whether he won because nobody else had a max tournament, then I think yes. But he still scored. He still scored +4, which is an extremely impressive score, despite the fact that there was a player there in Abasov who normally wouldn't be in such a tournament. But to Gukesh's credit, he beat him twice. Nobody else did that.
Yeah. Mm.
And he played 4-H6 in the Nimsu Indian, which is, how do you even come up with that? That's the question. And he had really deep prep there as well, which was impressive. So he really did take the steps to try and beat Abasov with black. For instance, Nakamura, he played the Slav, and Abasov was more or less playing for a draw as white, which I think is, he's so overmatched in such a field that I don't think that's unfair at all. Mm. But Gukesh, like, he really did it all. He really did it all there. Yeah, it was impressive.
And I actually have a follow-up question sort of both to you, Magnus, and you, David. We have discussed in the past, you know, playing the main lines is boring. It could turn into a quick draw. Is it somewhat refreshing to kind of look at some new ideas, new type of openings presented from some of the players in the candidates?
A bit of both for me. I like to see that, I mean, it's interesting to see that there are new ideas, but it's also kind of sad to see kind of how far you have to go to get a game that you cannot really play the best lines anymore. But it has been really impressive to see how hard the players have worked to find things that get a game. And sometimes you end up like Gukesh against Alireza, where he played a line that doesn't work for White in the Berlin, which I played against Aronia and lost the game back there in 2015 when he came up with a new idea. Like, it doesn't work. He was worse. And he won partly because he played really well and also because Alireza was not playing well at that tournament. So like, there are several factors to why people manage to get these games from the opening. But it is nice to see that you can find ideas, but it should be put into that context of that there is a problem at the core when it's, you know, when it's so hard to find something that even gives you playability.
Yeah. And you, David, you followed mm-hmm. the games closely. You're a very, very strong grandmaster yourself. And what are your thoughts on the opening and some of the ideas that the players came up with?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit like Magnus. It's refreshing to see. I mean, actually, as a commentator, normally I'm able to kind of go off on some monologue about every opening because I've seen it before or I have some experience or I can kind of quote key games here. There were a lot where very early on I was kind of unable to draw from that. Kind of
was it challenging for you to kind of see some unexpected moves or ideas?
It's refreshing. I mean, it's nice to get these new positions, but yeah, it's kind of mixed feelings as well. It's like, oh, wow, they must have had to go really deep on these main lines, even sidelines. I mean, we barely saw any flank openings, for example. We barely saw the English. We barely saw the Reti, any of these kind of... I mean, it was nice in a way, but also... it just felt odd that every player was having to be so creative every game, maybe apart from Abasov, who was trying to shut things down and happy to play main lines with white. But it was odd. It felt like it was players occasionally showing frustration or occasionally trying to have to be too creative, going against type, going against their own style. So mixed feelings. Again, I couldn't play like that. I'm not sure how I would feel if I had to spend countless hours just getting a level or slightly worse position with white just to get a game. But that's how modern chess is going, I guess. Yeah. That's the stage we're at.
The remarkable thing, also one of the reasons it should be noted that a lot of games actually got going a bit, is that players weren't only trying to block as black. Like, they were often trying to land the first surprise. Like, there were a lot of minor lines being sidelines being played in the Rui Lopes, for instance. Even the Italian was being played and has apparently some playability, even though it's been analyzed and played by every single top player now for 7-8 years. So it would have been interesting to see what the takeaway had been from the tournament if Gukeš and Alireza had been replaced by the two players who originally were going to qualify for those spots, namely Giri and so. We might have had a different conversation now.
Lots of Berlin draws.
No, not necessarily Berlin. Like, yeah, but
yeah, as a joke.
All of these players, like, it's a combination of a lack of willingness, but also a lack of ability to shut down as black. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And next question, David, for you from Greg Smith. Sounds very British.
Hey, Greg.
Who will Ding use as seconds for the World Championship match? All Chinese players or Western players too? What do you think?
It's hard to know. I wonder whether Richard Rapport will still be there as, a close friend, spiritual guide, and at second.
There seemed to be a bromance there brewing during the previous World Championship.
I think that
match
was one of the biggest surprises. Not many people saw that that pairing coming, but I don't know too much, to be honest. I mean, it's always been a bit of a mystery, Ding. I know for many years he was working, not quite alone, but with some seconds back in China that he would communicate with remotely. And Magnus probably knows more from experience playing against him. But yeah, it's an unknown quantity.
And Magnus, I mean, would you change a winning team if you have a good second? You won the first World Championship match. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that depends on if they have ideas left or if they have like the creative flow to come up with more. Otherwise, he might change. To David's point, I think Ding's been working a bit with Wei Yi in the past. And I'm sure if he's involved, like he's honestly probably a better player than Ding at the moment, or he clearly is a better player than Ding at the moment. But I think that could be something. Otherwise, I don't think that's the biggest issue, though, for Ding. He has to sort out things psychologically before he starts thinking about pure chess preparation.
And the final question from Lemon V. Is there an opponent in chess that you're afraid to face, David? Maybe because of a bad loss against them or something? And did he watch a movie lately that he really enjoyed?
Oh, wow. Some very different questions there. I mean, I'm afraid of two players in the world. Magnus Carlsen, because he's very strong at chess. And Wang Hao, because he beats me every single time.
Yeah. What's with that? What's the story?
He's in my head. It's too late. He's my bogey player. There have been so many incidents with him, and his mannerisms at the board irk me. And yeah, everyone has something like that, right? Everyone has someone they struggle against. As for the other question, a movie?
Are you a movie buff? Do you enjoy watching movies?
I do, but I'm more of the kind of inner child Marvel superhero type guy. Nothing too sophisticated, so I'm even struggling. I'm watching a TV show right now called Baby Reindeer, which is a bit, I was traumatized by the last episode, let's just say that.
It's a weird show. I've seen it as well.
It's super weird.
But Odin, you're a grandmaster in watching movies, so you'll have that question as well. What movie did you watch lately that you really enjoyed?
It's been a long time since I enjoyed any movie. Probably, no, I really like Dune 2.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed that. But at the same time, I like to criticize that the Furman, they look really like the pseudo cars when they're in battle. And the thing is their feature of like going up from the desert sand. I really hate it when it looks so similar. And that I liked a lot with the action part of Dune 1. You could really see the difference. It's a bit more chaotic in Dune 2. So
that's a 2800 level of attention to detail there.
Yeah.
Great. Sounds good. Magnus, thank you so much for joining us on such a short notice. It was great to get some insight on the candidates tournament.
Yeah, no. If I'd gotten more than 20 minutes notice from when we were eating lunch, I probably wouldn't have come. So that was perfect.
Thank you so much. And thank you, David.
Pleasure.
This was tremendous. You've commented on the candidates and given us some great insight and stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you. If the players are half as tired as I was just from commentating, then yeah, they deserve their rest. It was a lot of fun.
I just have to say something to our both our Norwegian audience and our new international audience. Follow us on all the social platforms, and there's only one thing left to say.
Vi sjakkes.